I'm Kurt Anderson in Studio 360, and it's time now for this week's cover story on Harmony. This is the voice of a traditional throat singer from the Asian country of Tuva. He's able to make three notes at once, two in his throat and one by forcing air through spaces that we all have somewhere in our heads. Tuva is famously the only country on the planet that keeps an index of national happiness. So the chords in that earthy, full voice spring from a culture that really values harmony in the widest sense. We're talking today about harmony in music, and also as an idea, a larger idea. Harmony describes how all kinds of things work next to each other, the reverberations between them. It's the difference between two or three notes or a few buildings in a skyline or two figures in a painting that creates a mood that's dissonant or bright or startling or calm, all of which harmony can be. My guest today is the composer and jazz pianist Fred Hirsch. Hirsch has made a name for himself by digging into the standard repertoire and reinventing it. He's pulled new things from the music of Billy Strayhorn and Thelonious Monk. Fred Hirsch, welcome to Studio 360.
Very nice to be here.
How did you become a jazz pianist?
Well, it's not generally the sort of thing that one, I guess, consciously decides. I started playing piano as a 4-year-old. It was in the house, and grandparents were reasonably musical. My parents are not particularly talented. Sorry, Mom, Dad. But they went to symphony concerts and, you know, made that kind of music available to me. And I really just sort of went to it. It wasn't, nobody forced me or asked me. And from the very beginning, I would improvise. But typically, my improvisations would sound like classical music because that's sort of what I came from. And I also went, when I was in, from around 3rd to 6th grade, I think the best thing that my parents did for me in terms of my musical development was they gave me private instruction in kind of musical building blocks. For instance, by the time I was out of elementary school, I had done what most freshmen and sophomores do at a conservatory.
Kind of extraordinary.
Yeah, it was kind of, I guess, the prodigy thing. And then when I got out of high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, so I went to college in Iowa, at Grinnell College, and I kind of stumbled into a jazz club on a cold winter night and was fascinated. As much by the people and sort of the weirdness and kind of wackiness of the whole scene. It was very non-conservatory, non-white. And I asked to sit in, and, they indulged me, and I made lots of mistakes.
How brave of you.
Well, I mean, it was Tuesday night, and, you know, 6 people in the audience and 4 on the bandstand. I figured I got nothing to lose. So I'd sat in, and the only song that I really kind of knew was the tune Autumn Leaves. And I made lots of errors, you know, in terms of the form. And, you know, I had no experience. And this great older saxophone player who was leading the group, he took me in the back room and he sat me down and made me listen to Paul Gonzalez's solo on the blues on Duke Ellington Live at Newport, 1956.
Which he happened to have?
Which he happened to have on a record player in the back room. And he said, look, you seem to have a lot of talent. You seem like a nice kid. Why don't you get some records, listen, and come back? So I went to the record store and I bought every record that had Autumn Leaves on it because I didn't know any better. And I realized from that point that, first of all, they were all great in their own way. There was no best recording, and that they were all personal. And for some reason, I realized too that I really had the right kind of what we would now call a skill set to be a jazz musician, in terms of loving to do things with people, in front of people, not being a grind away in my room kind of musician, liking to take chances, liking the social aspect of the whole thing. It just, and basically I dropped out of school and started learning how to play. You know, that's where it kind of started. So there was no conscious decision, but once it bit me pretty hard.
When you were really developing your craft, what harmonies excited you?
My grandfather's a violinist, and I used to listen to string quartet recordings. And a very famous string quartet lived in our neighborhood, the LaSalle Quartet. And my piano teacher was the wife of the cellist. So I used to go listen to them rehearse, or I would be around their concerts. They would give house concerts. And I was always fascinated. I would try to follow the viola through against the violin, or the cello against the, you know, and just see how these beautiful horizontal parts made all this great vertical harmony. And so I kind of try to do that as much as I can on the piano.
When you say the horizontal parts that result in vertical harmony, you're speaking as if each instrument can be described by a wave, and it's the overlapping of those two waves.
It's the confluence, the vertical kind of confluence of those waves that gives us chords.
And thus harmony.
Right. Every, you know, when you have four notes, you know, in classic Western harmony, the Bach chorales or something like that, you basically have four parts, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and they all want to move. They don't just sit there. So I've always been interested in, you know, when I play the piano and trying to have the independence and to let my ear work in such a way that things can really, there's lots going on underneath it. It's not just vertical chunks of notes. It's all those notes, every note in that chord, each one may or may not want to move somewhere, you know.
Well, so, instead of just talking about it, let's move over to that beautiful piano there, and you can demonstrate.
Okay. When you have just two notes going on at the same time, it may outline a harmonic movement, but basically, when you have any two notes, you know, playing at the same time, theoretically, they work with each other. There are no mistakes. The more notes you get, the more tricky it becomes. I was thinking of a folk song that I used to play as a kid, Black is the Color. So one thing that I could do here, I'll try to play the tune through with very, very simple harmony once, and then I'll play through again with perhaps more complex harmony.
Great.
See what you all think. So that's a fairly diatonic melody. There's no sharps or flats. So, I mean, if I sat and probably messed with it, I could probably come up with many, many, many different ways of harmonizing that particular melody. Some would be pretty whacked out, and some would be more like that kind of functional harmony.
When people, when amateurs, when non-singers get together and sing, they can usually carry the tune, carry the melody. But when they try to actually harmonize, that's a much more difficult thing to do. Why is that? What is it about harmony that makes it less simple or primal than carrying a melody?
Well, it's the old cliche, if you look at human nature, why can't we all just get along? You know, it's a similar sort of thing, you know. When you're particularly singing in a four-part group, when you're singing the alto or the tenor, the inner voices, you have to adjust your pitch relative to what's above and below you and hold your own. You know, there's all kinds of life metaphors if you want to get into that.
Well, there are, and which is interesting because in artistic realms, and music not least, there are all kinds of complicated forms of harmony that are not just, you know, Norman Rockwellian sweetness.
Exactly. And also, you need contrast, you know, to really appreciate the resolution of a beautiful major chord. You need something going before it that builds tension. And all of Western music and a great deal of Western visual art and Western theater is all about, you know, conflict resolution, whether it's boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl, whether it's, you know, what happens, you know, in the paintings of, you know, of Picasso or, you know, I mean, it's all kind of the same thing. And then so you appreciate the consonants. But if it's all vanilla, then it's vanilla. You know, you got to have, it's got to come from somewhere.